and you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. Delighted indeed I am to take our microphones up to Ireland's Great Hunger Museum in Hamden, Connecticut, and to welcome the Executive Director of Ireland's Great Hunger Museum, Grace Brady. How are you, Grace?
I'm doing well, thanks, Adrian.
Good.
Nice to be here.
A lot of a tremendous amount of attention in the press and on Facebook and Twitter and all the other stuff, which I really don't know that much about, but a tremendous amount of interest in your current exhibition there in the Lion's Den. Maybe you'll fill us in on that.
Sure. It's our first loan exhibition. It's an international exhibition based on the artist Daniel MacDonald, who has the distinct sort of pleasure of being the only artist who painted during the famine of a famine scene. So the painting that exists, Irish peasant family discovering the blight of their store, was lent to us by the University College Dublin National Folklore Collection for this exhibition. And he was a young artist, but a prolific artist. He died at a young age, ironically, of famine. But he produced a lot of work, not only of the famine. There's really the only known painting of a scene of the famine is this family discovering their potato blight. The other paintings he does were painted during the famine time, 1842 through 1850s, which is quite remarkable if you think about it.
Yes.
He was somebody, he was actually a Protestant Irish who grew up in a fairly well-to-do family, and he was able to straddle both painting royalty and painting peasants.
Grace Brady, give us some more of the significance of In the Lion's Den.
Well, Daniel MacDonald, in the show we have 21 works by Daniel MacDonald, paintings and sketches, two of which are in the museum's collection. And what was interesting about MacDonald was not only did he paint sort of the peasants, that one image of the peasants discovering the blight, but he also was interested in painted everyday Irish life and the cultural life, the religious life, the spiritual. He painted on superstition and things like that, but never did he do it with malice. There were many painters and caricaturists at the time who, as you probably know, you've seen images of them, where they depict the Irish in a less than human way.
Yes.
Not a very positive light, very stereotypical drunk or ape-like, less than human. But MacDonald never did that. He was very witty and fun, had a sense of humor, but he never depicted the Irish in a malicious way, which was something that was important at the time, not only because it was during the famine time, but there was a full cultural life of Ireland that needed to be and there's a range of sketches that he did, really just depicting everyday life, a schoolmaster for one, courtship, getting ready for mass, getting ready for bed, and
yeah,
things like that. He also has a painting where he depicts a bowling scene, a lawn bowling scene. So not only was he a talented and beautiful painter, but he was able to paint the Irish in the way that they lived, while also depicting the trouble of the time and the famine. And there's a painting in the show called The Fighter, which deals with faction fighters when the Irish would try to self-regulate within themselves. And it, all underlying there is the idea of resistance and all of those things going on at the time. So he was a very prolific and interesting artist, but never painted the Irish in a negative, intentionally negative way. And he had quite
quite a wit to him. He grew up with a father who was in the cultural world of Cork, hanging out with folklorists and caricaturists and intelligentsia. So he grew up around that whole cultural vibe, and it really comes through in his work.
Now, Grace, were at that time were paintings commissioned, by the wealthy, by governments? Were there
Most Irish artists working at the time would have gone to London or England to paint, but many of them suppressed their Irishness just for that reason, in order to be able to sell their work. MacDonald never suppressed his Irishness, and he didn't really need to. So once he got to London, he was able to have royalty lined up on their portraits painted, yet all the while painting about the Irish culture and life as well. So he was somebody who was able to do both sides, whereas not every artist would have that luxury, so to speak, and so that's why they would suppress their Irishness. But yes, most artists would want to sell their work. That's how they would make a living. And if you were painting dying people, chances are people would not be buying your work.
Right. So how many paintings in all do we know about?
Well, it's tricky because he did die so young. He died at 32 of fever, ironically. And there's many. He was very prolific in sketching. And we know we had to do, our curator, Nivo Sullivan, really had to do serious research to go out and find these works. And I'm sure there's still some going, so people are going to go to their closets and attics and come and say, oh, I have a MacDonald sketch or something like that.
Yeah.
So we know of the big ones that are in the major collection institutions. But, for example, Neve called me and said, oh, when we were starting this research, she said, I'm going to write an article in an Irish newspaper just asking people if they can check their parents' houses or their houses and see if they have any MacDonald sketches that they may not even know about. And I, the jaded New Yorker, said, oh, well, you do that, but there's no way you're ever going to get a response. Well, it shows the power of determination. We have a gentleman who lent us two sketches in the show from Bristol, England, and he read the article and contacted me and said, my father had two sketches by MacDonald and they're hanging in my dining room. So we know that there's more out there, but because a lot of them have never been published, it's very difficult to get an actual accurate account. And because he died, he never married, he died with no children, there's no real records of where these things went. He lived with an older sister for a while, but then she passed, and so there's not a lot of letters sort of telling his story or things like that, which is a real shame. So we're hoping this exhibition will bring to light this sort of, he deserves to be recognized, and since there is not much known about him, that maybe more will come to light and people will learn more about him.
It's really great. Now, you had mentioned curator Neve O'Sullivan there. I would like, for the benefit of those who perhaps have heard a lot about Ireland's Great Hunger Museum, Quinnipiac University and Garth of War at Hamden, Connecticut, tell us a little bit about the exhibitions, what the museum is about, and you are in charge of, again, of the museum itself. Try to paint a picture for us.
Sure. Well, the museum was opened to the public in October of 2012, so we're coming up on 3.5 years or so. And the mission from the start was twofold. One, to obviously educate people about the Great Hunger and the real consequences and the facts surrounding it, not just that a potato crop failed. But the second part of the mission is to showcase first-rate Irish visual art and Irish-American visual art. As you know, Adrian, the Irish get accolades for their music and playwrights and theater and literature, but the visual, not as much. I think it's changing, but this museum is trying to showcase what fine art there really is coming out of Ireland in the past and in contemporary times. And we use the term the long story. We're trying to tell the long story, pre-famine, famine, and post-famine.
Yeah.
So the collection is growing, and part of that is our curator, Neil Sullivan, who resides in Dublin, employed by the museum, and we work in tandem together. She does the curation, the research of the work. She, with this exhibition, there's a book that she wrote which accompanies the exhibition and tells all about McDonald's life and history. And it's all original research and new information about him. It's quite a beautiful book. So I'm the director of the museum, so I oversee basically all aspects of it, and exhibitions are included there. But the curation and the research is done by our curator, Nico Sullivan.
Among the works by noted contemporary Irish artists, we rattle that off as if we should all know who they are, and in fact, we're getting to know who they are on our side of the Atlantic. You know, you've got sculptors like John Behan and Rowan Gillespie and Eamon O'Doherty, and you have the visual artists who again are becoming known very much and associated with the museum. Robert Bala?
Yes, Robert Bala did a beautiful stained glass piece for us, a triptych. And he's a well-known artist, but he's becoming more well-known here, just as the others that you mentioned. Rowan Gillespie just did was commissioned to do a public sculpture downtown Manhattan, which I'm sure you know about.
Yes, indeed.
And
yeah.
Brian McGuire is another contemporary artist living in Dublin who works and has worked in the past, and he has some beautiful work. He did a project in the 1980s on Uganda and the children and the people dying there. And he did the piece that we have in our collection, The World is Full of Murder, not necessarily directly linked to the famine, but it's the idea of, you know, killing and things like that. And many of the contemporary artists that I've spoken to say they use Holocaust images for their inspiration because, as you know, the Great Hunger photography was in its infancy, so there aren't many photographs to refer to.
Yes.
But just recently, Brian McGuire did a show based on all the killings in Juarez, Mexico, and fascinating work by him. We had a show in downtown New York in the fall. And so we have artists that are social activists, human rights activists. They feel very strongly and very serious about their work and believe that art is the way to bring forth these social issues and to talk about the past and get people talking. So they're an interesting group of artists that I've had the privilege to meet.
Right.
And, you know, meeting more and new ones as I go along. Alana O'Kelly is another great contemporary working artist in Ireland.
Yes. And you have Hughie O'Donoghue, who is...
Hughie O'Donoghue, yep.
Who is, again... all of them bringing a unique addition to the collection, which has been growing, for the last 3.5 years. But tell us about the art and the establishment of the museum pieces before Ireland's Great Hunger Museum was purpose built.
Well, the collection, John Leahy, the president of Quinnipiac, in the 90s, 1997, as you know, was the Grand Marshal of St. Patrick's Day Parade, and
yes.
He made the theme, The Great Hunger. And so that sort of how the genesis started of the idea for the education about the Great Hunger. And one of the gentlemen who heard him give one of his talks was the name of Murray Lender, who was on the Quinnipiac board, and he was asked to give a donation to the library for some work in the library. He told John that he would agree to do so, but he wanted it geared to tell the Great Hunger story because it was so compelling. And he said, I grew up Jewish in New Haven, and I had Jewish and Irish and Italian friends, but no one really talked about the Great Hunger, but everyone knew about the Holocaust. So he felt very strongly that this story had to get out. So thus a room in the library called the Lender Family Special Collection Room was created in the late 90s, and it's shaped like a small ship. And so John started to acquire books and literature and artwork for that space. So it really started over a decade ago. And then as the collection grew, Quinnipiac realized it would be a good idea to have a museum to dedicate to this so they could show more of the work and tell the story on a larger scale. So the museum was built and opened in 2012, and that's when I came on board and Neve came on board shortly before me.
Now, you being a city guard, tell us a little bit about your previous position.
I like to think there is no previous, but there was a big previous. I worked at the Metropolitan Museum of Art for over 23 years, and so I was trained well by a lot of people that are directors and lawyers and things like that. So, and I loved it there. I was the assistant secretary to the board of trustees, and I managed an administrative staff in the museum archives, and learned a great deal and appreciated museums as an educational space and also just what they produce. And I've always been a lover of art and believe that culture really is the fabric of our society, whatever type of art. So it could be music, it could be visual, it could be performance. And so I had a career there, and I continued to grow, and I loved it, and I had no intention of leaving. And then when this posting came up, a friend of mine jokingly said to me, they said, you're Irish, you like everything Irish, you should apply for this. So I, you know, gave it a shot, and long story short, I moved from a job in Manhattan to Hamden, Connecticut, and I'm thrilled to be there, and it's exciting, and we have great things ahead and great things going on now. I feel very privileged.
Yeah, when you look back over the last 3.5 years, the programs, the museum programs were, again, in your domain, they included tours and collections, discussions, film. Now, were those eased in, or was that pretty much from the time you arrived there? Was that something that you had rolled out, before you came there?
No, when I started, it was pretty much, even though the collection, there was a collection there and the museum building was built, I always liked to think, we were starting something new, because you can have the object and you can have a building, but you need to make them alive and make sure the museum's not stagnant so people have a reason to come back. And when I started, I knew there would be tours and lectures and musical programs and whatever kind of programming that we could, attract the local community.
Right.
And beyond. And Claire Pizzani, who's the museum manager, does a great deal in, recommending and finding people to perform or to give lectures, book signings at the museum, and she does a great job doing that. And we have people approach us now saying, oh, I would love to come and either, tell a story or my book or give a PowerPoint on my research and things like that. So we try to keep it diverse. We're learning as we go. Connecticut and the Irish, we have a lecture coming up, Thursday, by Neil Hogan, who writes about the Connecticut and Irish. So we try to mix it up a bit. We have children's activities, trying to get the younger audience interested in Irish history and Irish art. So it's a work in progress. It's constantly changing. And this first exhibition was our biggest endeavor to show a new collection and the museum in a different light. We plan to do that going forward.
I think, though, that in the short period of time that you have transformed the museum and has achieved a enough so much acclaim and notoriety that you don't have the difficulty of getting the scholars, the researchers, artists and students are finding you, at this point. So it should be, it's a tribute to the work that has been done over a relatively short period of time.
Well, that's kind of you to say. I mean, it's definitely a team effort, and we're trying to make it a vibrant place for people to come and to return to. You know, it's very satisfying to see people come from other states. We've had most states represented. We've
yes.
had about 18 countries visit, people from 18 different countries visit. And it's very satisfying to see, you know, there's a real story to it. It's the Irish story, but there's the immigration, there's the poverty. There's, and in
yeah.
today's world, that could be a lot of people's, different people's stories. So while we're definitely focusing on the Irish, which we should be, because it's still so unknown to so many people, people are, I find it amazing when people come and say, I had no idea my ancestors were Irish. And,
yeah.
you know, it's a real hats off to John Leahy for, you know, thinking of this idea. And it's a very innovative, creative way to tell the story. It's not just textbook. You know,
yeah.
learning through the visual is a very innovative, captivating way for people to learn. So I, you know, I tip my hat to him, and I just feel great to be a part of it and to try to keep moving forward.
You know, and my guest, friends, is Grace Brady, Executive Director of Ireland's Great Hunger Museum, Quinnipiac University in Hamden, Connecticut. Grace, you know, the topic itself of Ireland's Great Hunger, the famine, was one which indeed was not popular and probably would never have come to prominence had John Leahy back in 1997 decided that, in fact, that would be the theme of St. Patrick's Day. I think it's very well known that in Ireland in particular, and for that matter, the Irish diaspora, would those who did know about it had still the effects of that in their genes, and it was not there was nothing sexy about the topic. It was part of the repression that we all inherited. And in fact, it is well known that after John Leahy's selection as Grand Marshal, there were many who felt that, you know, there were other things happening. There's Northern Ireland. There are so many topics that were, you know, contemporary. Why go back and why, focus on a part of our history that not only brought tremendous pain, you know, to the Irish and to the Irish immigrant, but it also brought with it, you know, a sense of guilt for survivors, which indeed wasn't created. That concept was not created by the Irish, but we managed somehow to inherit that. Do you find people who who may be, you talked about, you know, visitors there who said they had no idea and so forth. Do you find that there is a reluctance for people that they get the, you know, that they get the shivers with just the exhibitions, with all of particularly say with your films and your collection, your performances,
you know,
there?
I find in the beginning I walked around the galleries more because I had more time and would sort of listen to people's conversations or engage in conversations with them. And what I find is, resoundingly, people are grateful that the museum is there. They say,
mm-hmm.
Yes, it's horrible. It was a terrible time in Irish history. There's guilt, there's shame. But look how far we've come. And I do think that's an important part of it, that I ask, but look how we changed America, the Irish.
Yeah.
You know, there's no question it's a tough subject. And I had one woman who was leaving, and she said to me, she had tears in her eyes. She said, this is a wonderful exhibit. She goes, but I just don't see any hope here.
Yes.
And I said to her, I said, well, you know, thank you for sharing that. I said, I actually do see hope, because the only way to move forward in anything is to get through it, to address it and get through it. And if nobody knew about the Great Hunger and all these consequences, you know, that could be why the repression or the repressive thoughts or how we feel about ourselves,
right,
or as a whole, or, you know, in order to get past that, you have to move through it. And so I think there's a lot of hope, even though the initial subject is brutal,
yes,
and it's tough. And, I mean, trust me, I've been reading all these books that I have never read before. And, you know, it's tough going, but it's important, I think,
okay,
to look at it, just like it's important, I think, to look at today's hunger in the world and things like that.
Yeah, unfortunately,
so,
there is a tie. There's a tie-in, as, in fact, we found with the in Battery Park City, with the Hunger Museum at Battery Park City, in that there is a sense again that this is not something as a single incident, but that actually this became the beginning of, you know, Irish immigration again. There were plenty of reasons, and Simon did not begin Irish immigration, but the hunger did in fact bring a new and most unwelcome start to what particularly in America would become the subject again that was easily brushed over. But I want to ask you about the families who go there. Normally, for museums, I'm considering that this has to do with the Ireland's Great Hunger. One might think, well, no point in bringing the kids there, but actually the opposite is true.
That's right. We have many school groups that come, and more are registering to come at different ages. You know, we've had very little ones, 5 and 6, who obviously are going to look around and get what they can get out of it. Then we have middle school and high school, and some of them are learning it in school. And so they may come in, and their only knowledge is that the potato was what one child said to me, poisoned. The potato was poisoned, and so the people, you know, died. So it's a doorway into at least bringing up the subject. And then it leads to other subjects. For example, I was mentioning immigration. Well, many children in America today, and I ask them when they come, were your parents or grandparents born in America, or were they born in another country? And predominantly, 3/4 of them always raise their hands, and they come from many different countries.
Yes.
And that creates a dialogue. And, well, why did they come? And so it's a great teaching experience for children. Parents definitely bring their children on weekends, and would love to see more. And that's why we try to offer a variety of children's activities just to sort of get them exposed to the topic, even if we can't delve too deeply into it.
Mm-hmm.
But people are, a lot of people I hear say, oh, I'm bringing my friends back, or I have a relative visiting, and I'm going to be sure they come, and I'm going to spread the word, and I had no idea. And so I feel it's important to get the families to continue to come, as well as schools.
Yes, yes.
And speaking of the Irish Hunger Memorial, which I think is another wonderful place teaching place, Brian Cole, who is the artist who designed that,
right,
was at the museum for the opening of the McDonald exhibition, and he gave remarks on McDonald as an artist, as well as the idea that art survives and art needs to continue to go on. So it's another idea about art as education and all of that. So we love having families visit and of all ages.
You know, from the beginning, and I've always, you know, from the day the doors opened, I've always felt good about telling the audience that admission is free and that it is open to the public. And that's great, but there is a reality as you progress and as you're bringing in such exhibitions that there, not all of this is God-given in the sense that there...
Amen to that, Adrian.
Yeah, so yes, it's free. Yes, it is open. Yes, it's great. But it does have ongoing costs, which are increasing tremendously. So how do you get your funding? I mean, we have to assume that the lenders and those who are, you know, extreme great benefactors are becoming, you know, overburdened and indeed have this tremendous, highly competitive, you know, reach for limited dollars. How do you do that?
Well, that's one of my biggest part of my job, and it's not an easy one. For example, this exhibition that came, we applied for several grants, and some were approved and some weren't, so that helped us with some of the expenses. We received donations from people who visit, and we're always encouraging people. We accept any donation, a dollar to more.
Yeah.
And it is helpful, and I know where it goes, and it goes to our publication program, our Famine Folios, which is continuing, and for exhibitions. But there's no question it's difficult. The operating side of things, right now, Quinnipiac University covers the operating acquisitions. We acquire now only when I can raise the money. We have a major acquisition that will be releasing to the public later this spring, and that was all due to the generosity of donors when we tried, when we launched a spring acquisition appeal last spring. So it's fundraising, it's donations, it's grants, sponsorships, and things like that. So it is, it's a regular challenge.
And it's an ongoing challenge. This is not, this is something
that's an ongoing challenge for sure.
So now, some 3.5 years later, I can add that whereas admission is free and open to the public, the time is right now to have those who indeed learn a lot from your own website.
IGHM.org.
Yes, IGHM.org. And that if it's all museums have a need for funds, and in fact many museums have membership drives and whatever, but you're when you figure that you know visiting and exploring and learning and all of the advantages provided by Ireland's Great Hunger Museum, that is as good a cause, and it does allow you to even take on bigger and, yes, more expensive projects. So in that sense, I would like to, join with you in saying, yes, this is not a bottomless pit, and there's an opportunity here for those who indeed feel very strongly and learn more about Ireland's great hunger because of the museum and because of John Leahy and Quinnipiac University. This is something that's this is a very good cause and one indeed that should be supported. And you have that information, I assume.
Yeah,
not I assume, I know you have that
information.
Yes.
There's a list of, annual opportunities depending upon the level of your gift. It explains to you what that can go towards. So if there was something that you didn't see on that, someone didn't see on that list and they were interested in discussing an idea with me or any kind of donation, I would be happy to speak to anyone at any time.
My guest friend, Grace Brady, Executive Director of Ireland's Great Hunger Museum in Hendon, Connecticut, and Quinnipiac University, of course. To get in touch with Grace, you want to give your telephone number, Grace?
Sure. It's 203-582-6573. Or you can reach me through the website at ighm.org.
And again, the current exhibition is actually, that's running through when? Is it April?
April 17th. So there's still a couple more months. But we've been getting great press, and we're expecting some more reviews to come out in the press in the future. So I hope if you're interested, you come and see it before it goes away.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks for filling us in and giving us some valuable information there. And good luck to you, Grace.
Thank you very much, Adrian.
Okay. Thanks, Douglas. Grace Brady, their friend's executive director of Ireland's Great Hunger Museum. The website, www.ighm.org. Telephone number 203-582-6500. And friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.